Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey there, it's Brock with the Sprocket Podcast. We are here in Portland, Oregon. I just got off of a TriMet bus, and I am on my way to the grocery store to pick up a six-pack of beer for listener and contributor Drew the Welder, who just did some work on my tall bike. So thank you, Drew, very, very much. Today we're bringing you a little extra. We recorded a lot of stuff when Brian, or Shadowfoot as he's better known, visited us at the podcast in the studio for episode 299. So this is 299B with more talk with Shadowfoot about beer, bikes, transit, and many other things in New Zealand. So without further ado, please enjoy. Zealand, is it kind of at pace with kind of what's happening here?
Yeah, seems like craft beers are huge. I think sort of all over the world they suddenly surged in popularity.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite down there?
No.
It's impossible.
It's impossible. I like trying different ones.
Yeah.
Whenever I've got the choice, I'll try something new rather than have something I've already had.
Right. And you were talking about the app that you have that allows
Untapped.
You to...
Yeah, Untapped.
Yeah.
Your favorite beer is beer.
I sort of don't enjoy drinking spirits, so...
Right, yeah.
Beer, wine.
I enjoy spirits a little bit too much. Like, I think I've discovered recently that I just shouldn't drink spirits at parties. That's my... Yeah.
I also don't enjoy hangovers, so...
Exactly, yeah. And I don't enjoy blacking out. And that's just like, beer allows me to have what I enjoy about the alcohol experience without, you know, without losing control, so...
It's going to take a lot of effort to push it too far. to fall off the cliff, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
With whiskey, you just, I have a shot.
Man. Exactly.
Oh, I want a friend, and
I'll have another shot.
A party.
Yep. That happened to me not too long ago.
Yep. One of those nights.
Yes. That was a decision-making morning the day after. It's like, well, I think I know myself now.
Well, I've learned something about
myself. Yes, exactly. And that's, exactly.
You have to decide, though, you have to think, is it something you would do again?
Right.
And if the answer is yes, then you should have no regrets about it.
Precisely.
Because that's... part of your nature. And if the answer is no, that you do regret it still, then you just don't do it again.
Right.
So live without regrets. Mm-hmm. Either accept that, yep, that's how you are and you'll keep doing it, or you make that improvement and never do it again.
Right. Accept it one direction or the other. Yeah. It's a good call.
Guilt is where it's probably more common.
Right.
Shouldn't feel guilty about doing the same thing multiple times.
Yeah. You dial your life so that doesn't happen.
Or you accept, yep, that's the way you are. You're not going to be guilty about it.
There you go.
Doing the same thing twice is only silly if you expect different results the second time.
Right.
So tell me about these bike adventure biking you do.
Nice.
I'll accept that, yeah. I mean, but hey, it's type 2 fun, you know, as we've discussed here before.
Right.
I hate, like, when you're on there, like, you're fucking, everything's breaking in the middle of the woods, and, like, it's everything, you're mad at everything, but then you go, it's kind of neat. My life's interesting, if nothing else.
It's the difference between the journey and the destination.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly, yeah. And it's all about the journey on those ones, because Longview is not a cool place to go.
And, I mean, the destination sometimes is a good story.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I was bored that weekend. Let's go do something.
Right.
As a case where I wasn't bored that weekend.
What we didn't ask you about, Brian, was your bicycling when you're at home.
I just have a road bike. My last bike had broken, replaced it with a road bike. I have a 15-kilometer, so about a 10-mile commute to work each day.
Thank you for making the conversion. I appreciate it. You have a shower at work. That's good. Yeah. That's a great amenity.
Last job had as well. This work is good. They provide towels as well.
Oh, wow.
Towel service, nice. So it makes it that much easier. I don't have to deal with that.
It's fantastic.
I have a 2 kilometer hill to climb at home, which I hate, especially on the road bike. So,
do you know what the vertical change is?
No.
That's fine.
Two kilometers
of up is annoying, no matter how you cut it.
Up and there is a bit of up and down in it. So I put my bike in the back of the car and go down to the local train station, park and ride at the bottom of the hill.
There you go.
And yeah. I just have a flat ride.
Right. It's like the what they say, the last mile solution, like whatever it is that kind of helps you finish up that one.
It means that I don't have that hill to dread when I am finishing the ride.
Yeah.
And so it makes it much easier to do each day.
And it reminds me of the thing, we were talking about this, Aaron, I think, but like if you don't enjoy something, you shouldn't do it.
Yes.
Because like the more you hate it, like the more you'll associate whatever you're doing with pain those, and unhappiness.
That frustration and
so see you as a drawn next feelings.
Exactly. But, let's do some more pointless climbing.
Well, and it was one of the things when I first got into biking was like, you know, kind of shaming myself for not like being one of the hardcore right in the rain, you know, kind of bikers. But just realizing like, especially in the beginning, you don't want to be miserable on the bike. You want to associate as many good feelings as you, especially in the beginning, as you can on the bike.
You have to build the joy of just being on a bike first, and then you can put up with all the bullshit.
When I'm biking to work, I don't want to bike in the rain, especially when it's cold. When it wasn't so cold when I lived in Auckland, I didn't mind so much because it was quicker than the bus. Now the ride is similar to what the train and the walk from the station is, and on wet days, there's a good chance I'll just catch the train.
Yeah. When I bike to work, I don't care what the weather is, because it's early enough that there's not a lot of like transit options.
Right. Because you guys have the ridiculous
hours.
Yeah.
You guys are bus drivers, so the bus drivers aren't awake yet when you're going to work.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is why so many bus drivers drive to
work.
And
the transit options that are available, like instead of, you know, a fairly direct line, it's this big square that ends up taking like twice as long as I would on the bike.
Yep.
So, I don't care what the weather is. But on the way home, I'll take that extra hour or that extra half hour to get home if it's really nasty out, because I'm already tired. I'm already, you know, kind of spent from the day. Probably kind of miserable from having biked in the rain to work and not wanting to, you know, continue said misery.
Working in an office, I don't have to deal with the weather that way. And like, my ride home is part of my switch off and disconnect, so riding in the rain is not going to add to the fun of it. I'm usually listening to a podcast and that, because spoken word doesn't drown out sound of cars and that music might do. And sometimes I get uplifting music at start of some podcasts.
We aim to make your life better.
I have quite a few podcasts I listen to.
Yeah.
Right now I have no idea what would come up next. Because I listen in chronological order usually.
There we go.
So it might be technology, could be any sort of things. There's a Boise podcast about coffee I listen to.
Really? Got to look this up.
Out of Boise, Idaho.
Yep.
Really?
I'll be down.
Yeah.
Is it called Boise Beans?
Close.
Well, it's good to engage the brain, I feel like. It seems like oftentimes I like music at certain times, but I also feel like when I'm commuting particularly, it's nice to have like something that gets my brain on something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do audio. Right? I mean, I've fallen off of this in recent years, but for the longest time, it was, if I was just hanging out, it was music was playing.
Uh-huh.
Except for I'm on a bike.
Yeah.
Like, this last weekend, I mean, I put on some music at like between like 1 and 4 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
You know, when it's, I'm on a dead road, all right, fine, let's listen to the 9th or, you know, some highway, like the midnight driving playlist or whatever.
Something to fill the space or?
Yeah, just something there, you know, whatever. Because, well, I haven't slept in since, you know, I went to work this morning.
Right.
I mean, there's something about the bike where I can get to the brain space where I don't need, or, you know, not, I mean, you don't, having audio isn't necessary.
Yeah.
which, you know, I mean, which is annoying because it'd be a great time to like listen to podcasts and shit and like not have to be like worried about getting distracted. But it's just never been something that I've fully plugged into.
Right. That could go both ways, though, right? It's like whatever helps you get to where you want to be.
Well, for sure. And that's not to say, oh, you're doing it wrong.
Well, for me, it distracts me from my own thoughts. It's something else to think about. And music is very much a background thing for me. I'm not highly musical. And so I'll tend to tune out with the music and not focus on that. But a podcast means I think about other things. Don't have to think about my own thoughts.
Right, right. And it depends on whether you want your thoughts or not. Yeah.
That's one of the things I love about riding is how you get to spend time with your thoughts and it's your body is engaged enough that you can just figure out your shit.
Yeah. Do you have an idea of like kind of how you figure out? I mean, you said you don't really ride with music really at all unless...
No, I mean, very rarely.
So your shit's really figured out.
Well...
Because the other thing is one when you've hope, got your own thoughts, sometimes you want to make a note. Otherwise, you keep going over the same thing. And if you could write it down, it would be easier. And when you're biking, you don't really want to stop to make notes.
No. I mean, it's... There's that, there's that kind of just floating thing where you kind of you're thinking about it, you kind of loop around it long enough, and then there's the point of, all right, well, I'm done with that and move on or whatever. Mindful mindlessness is the
I've heard the term.
I just made it up.
Probably heard on a podcast.
Yeah, it does sound like a podcast, doesn't it? Yeah, I mean, the beauty of being able to think about everything and nothing at the same time is something that
I want what's yours and I want what's mine, as Michelle Branch said.
Neat. Sorry, I didn't have anything intelligent.
No, it's okay. That was the worst and most obscure.
First thing that came up was mindful mindlessness in goal pursuit.
Yeah, ooh, interesting. That sort of stuff.
Huh. On the internet.
Yeah.
Self-improvement stuff.
Sure. Well, it's almost like Adele and I were talking about this when we were hiking about flow. And that's what the fellow who wrote that book about bicycling slowly across the continent, we're going to talk to him in the summer sometime. And he was kind of looking for this state where you just kind of like exist and kind of like.
I read that article. I think. Like where it's like when you're running or you're moving and it's that thing that humans only get every now and again of flow.
Flow, yeah.
You're moving. When you're choosing your line is kind of where I took it. Like, you know, when all your, it's just about keep going forward, figure out like the small little minutia you're going to do to keep going.
And like a really beneficial autopilot.
Yeah. Where it's, you have the part of your brain that can do that, engage, and the rest of it's just free to do whatever. It's like, you guys go hang out back. We don't need you.
Yeah. All these people in my head can go take a nap.
This is probably the worst summation of flow. Like there is. Didn't mean to cut you off there. But
it's kind of that is the thing that I think I appreciate. That was the thing like when we were doing all that climbing. And obviously you said you're not a big fan of climbing, Brian, but it's
my bike's not geared well for climbs.
Right.
That's the excuse. My older bike did better on Wellington Hills.
Yeah. But there was like when we were doing Ron and we were doing like all this pointless climbing, there was a point where I was in pain, but I was also like, I'm kind of glad I'm here. I can just kind of switch off and this hill will be forever.
Yep.
I you know, I've always been climbing this hill and I always will climb it.
This is going to suck, but this is my life. Okay.
Right. And there was something that switched in my head where I felt like, oh, this is probably good for me somehow, in some way or another. Yep. I don't know.
So everything that is good for you feels bad?
Well, generally, yeah. Eat your vegetables.
Brush your teeth. Go to bed.
Exactly.
But, I mean, there's something about climbing where you can hate every second of it and still, in the back of your head, appreciate it. You still hate it. I
never got to this point on the round. Not on the round anyways. Yeah. You know. I think some of it, at least for me in this specific instance, is it's very hard for me not to compare myself to other people, which is kind of antithetical to the idea of flow and to the idea of like just kind of being present in the moment. And especially if I'm with a group of people, like no matter how much I have a camaraderie or how much I like the people I'm with, I'm still gonna like have this sense of like I gotta measure up to them, or I gotta like, I don't know, get their approval in some way, and especially if it involves having the other people wait for me.
I think the mindless, mindful mindlessness, you've got to do that ride by yourself. Having and other people there means it's not you doing it.
Right.
And at that time, you'd probably find it's a bit better. But as soon as there's someone else involved, you're thinking about your speed in comparison with them. Like, are you going too fast? Are you holding them back?
And I noticed mostly the times where I did like my own riding just in the city by myself just to ride. When I was doing a lot more of that, I don't do that so much these days just because of time and opportunity. When I was doing a lot more just riding by myself, when I was riding with other people, then that set of comparison or that mindset of comparison didn't show up as much.
Right.
And again, it's like, yeah, because I've done a lot of these roads on my own. I already know where I'm at, and I don't necessarily feel I have to measure up.
It's there's an interesting dynamic there when you're doing rides with people, and you end up everyone's kind of moving off each other. Like, hey, I kind of want to just stop and have a beer over on that stump. That looks like a nice stump, but you're not going to say that because hey, everyone else is pedaling,
right?
But then you're waiting for the guy who fell off the back, and all right, cool, we'll make sure, we'll wait till they catch up or whatever it is. And so you end up going faster and slower at the same time. Like, you're moving miles or faster, but your overall time is whatever it is. And that's this weird thing. And I love that. The kind of Audax style, hey, road captain, we're all kind of doing this ride together, but kind of follow whatever. And we'll wait till everyone gets together. It's not a competition.
Right.
But then there's the kind of randonneuring style of, all right, we're going to go do this, and here's the route. Have fun. I'll see you at the end.
Right.
Or on the way, maybe. We'll see what happens. Or just the pure solo rides. And they're different experiences each way through. But there are specific, you know, it plays with your brain notices the differences, blah, blah, blah.
It's interesting. Like, different people need different things too, I think. Like, it sounds like you were saying, Brian, that like you kind of like that time to disconnect and
be alone. It's also time to me.
Yeah, yeah. And different people need different things. And so, like, some people are eminently social. And some people, like me, I like hanging out with people, but I also spend most of my work day with people, and I also need that, like, alone time.
Ambivert, they've decided.
Yes, yes.
Not an introvert, not an extrovert.
Holy shit. I've never heard that term before.
I like that.
That's a good term.
Sometimes like the introvert, you need that alone space.
Go home and recharge.
Sometimes you can be really social.
Yep.
And introverts don't understand why you're suddenly able to be social, or extroverts don't understand why sometimes you can be really good with people, and other times you don't want to spend any time with them.
Yeah.
I'm going to go stare at a wall for 12 hours. It's going to be great.
My sister-in-law once described me as a frustrated introvert, because I'm generally describe myself as introverted, but then there are these times where, like, I was in bands, or I would like do like dumb stuff to make other people laugh, like at the rodeo. things like that.
Yep.
I like
being
ambivert.
Being a class clown is different, though, and that is what you're describing.
Sure.
That making other people laugh isn't being introvert or extrovert, I'd say.
No?
That's because that extrovert
you're
is
not getting
enjoying
your energy
that time with others rather than just making them laugh, which feels good when you make someone else laugh.
What I've always kind of the introversion extroversion thing is, where do you recharge?
Mm.
Do you draw energy from being with other people and being social, or do you draw energy from being solo? And it's always been kind of, well, yeah.
Sometimes you can bounce off other people, and it's really good.
Right. And you just get amped off everyone else and, yell into a megaphone and whatever. Other times it's, well, I'm just going to disappear into the woods for a while. That's going to be exactly what I need. And
Or disappear in a book is another option.
Exactly.
Yeah, either one.
Yourself from reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. It's interesting. My brother-in-law wrote, or was it writing? I'm trying to remember. No, he recommended a book to me where the guy was talking about the value of fiction, and like the value of fiction writing has many of the same qualities as going out by yourself on a bicycle. Just that it is like
escapism.
You're escaping, and you're using your imagination. And those are like skills that your brain needs. So
there's an article I read. Wow, that's beer. Yes. Thank you, beer mongers.
Southeast Division of 12.
Southeast Division of 12. No, but earlier today, I think it was MIT or New York Times or whatever, but about that kind of – it was about the kind of clear-mindedness you get from running was what it was based about. I'm like, that same thing happens on bikes. And it turns out that that's the only way we know – like you can grow new neurons as an adult. But the only thing we know of that encourages that is aerobic activity.
Fascinating.
So it like pushes blood to the hippocampus, and you're actually growing new neurons when you're doing that.
Okay.
And that's what that kind of prolonged, like once you're sweating, your brain is working better. And
you
that actually
feel smart. Yeah.
Until you hit that.
Growing neurons doesn't mean being smarter.
Right. Well, the hippocampus is like what, learning and memory. But that kind of the clarity of thinking is apparently scientifically grounded. It's not just we're all all my blood's in my legs. No, it turns out it's in your brain too.
Well, that plays a lot into like the new theories of like neuroplasticity and also mental health and exercise. You know, this really plays into you know, people who have studied people with depression or other mental illnesses, for lack of a better term, and those who have been on pills, those who intermittently take like medicine, and those who like don't take any medicine. And like the real mitigating factor of any of those three categories is whether or not you exercise.
Right.
Like changes how effective that medicine is, how effective, you know, just your own thoughts are in combating your own thoughts.
Right. And I think a similar thing is elderly people who exercise more deal better with mentally they do better.
Yeah.
So exercise helps with that.
Yes.
Yeah. And my grandpa, like, he's in his 80s now and loves to go out and walk or run or bike. And he hasn't been able to do as many of those because like physical limitations as he gets older, keep him from it. But, I think that's at least partially why he's as smart as he is. Like, cause he's the ultimate dumpster diver and like builder of buildings out of reclaimed wood. And he's just like, he's always got some project going. He's like, look at my lathe. And, he's making a thing. And
you take him to the ReStore yet, right around the corner?
He lives up in Tacoma, but he probably has one in his neighborhood somewhere.
Yeah, there's got to be a salvage lot somewhere up there.
But there's also just big boxes of like free wood.
Yeah.
And he's like, look at this shit I built.
Cool, I found this.
So, yeah, but I'm sure you could attribute all that, like the continued creativity. Part of it's just like that's kind of the kind of guy he is. But it's also like he has stayed active. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I was curious, Brian, this is a total change of subject, but how did you find the show originally?
I have no idea how long ago it was. I was probably looking for bike podcasts since.
Yeah.
I know I was listening to it, well, 3.5 years ago, so it was before that.
Right.
Probably wasn't much before that, but Aaron was a co-host then.
Uh-huh.
So
at least episode 100?
100, yeah. So you've been with us for almost 200 episodes. Thank you.
There is.
Thank you for following.
199. And then you finally showed up.
You know more banal details about our lives than you could possibly hope to, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's a good distraction for the bike ride.
I'm glad to hear it. We're the ones that help you disconnect.
Too much Portland stuff, though, sometimes.
Well, I would imagine that's kind of the thing I wonder sometimes, because we do talk about a lot of the things that are local, and I try and give as much context as we can, but...
Well, the news articles that tend to be more nationwide or worldwide add to it. Things like, and I'm not sure, well, you probably have mentioned it, but businesses that have bike racks do better business than that. While cyclists may buy less per trip, they visit more often and end up spending more overall. That sort of thing is something that should apply anywhere in the world.
Right, good right, point. Yeah.
And so those sort of news articles are highly beneficial. The specifics, the idea of some of the rides and that, which, see, I don't, there is a Cycling Action Network in New Zealand, and while I'm a nominal member of that, I don't go along to anything. The rides I know of tend to be more racing sort of rides that people do. So
road-focused, yeah.
But then when I go for a ride, it's because I have a destination and it's convenient. I don't tend to just... I can't just ride around with nothing, nowhere to go.
Right, right.
Ride for the sake of riding is not part of your life.
I play a game, sort of Ingress, which is augmented reality.
Okay.
And so I have a clip for the phone, which allows it to... It's good for Google
as well.
Is
that a quad lock?
Yep.
Yep. sorry, everybody.
And
name drop.
It's really good for going to places and going somewhere I might not have. Otherwise, lunchtime, I've jumped on my bike just to go and do something for that, taking me to new places. Mm-hmm. But I've always got to have that destination.
Sure. It's kind of like a, is that like a, almost like a, well, augmented reality, you said, but like geocaching for the internet or something? Is it sort of similar?
Like that. So this one, there's two teams, the Enlightened and the Luddites, Resistance.
Yeah.
The green team and the blue team, basically. Every 3 months is what is essentially a tournament.
Okay.
It's called an anomaly, but there is a bit backstory that doesn't always make sense. It's sort of two teams battling over territory and that. And some people are very much about the individual battles. I'm very much about the exploration aspect that
it
does.
Yeah, right.
So taking me to places that I haven't been before.
Yeah, like you said, it gives you a destination, gives you a reason to go somewhere,
And gives me a digital souvenir so I don't have too much clutter in that. But
there we go. So it's a minimalist hobby.
Yeah, so Finland, I traveled around different cities, partly to see the cities, and that added something to it that I got to... Well, it's like the idea you take photos and leave footprints.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's the one of the favorite like kind of weird biking sports is pass hunting, which I just learned about this the other day. It's basically just ride your bike over mountain passes and collect mountain passes.
Huh.
Which I, the face you're making is exactly the face to make.
Can I introduce you to the Southern Alps? That's what I think of as mountain passes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, but apparently it's a real thing where people just go out and, like, their whole thing is, I want to ride over every pass.
Untapped, where I'm collecting beers.
Yeah. Like, is there a pointy-shaped road I can ride over?
Right. If I go up, do I get to come down, please?
That's a good question.
Probably.
Yeah. Brian, are you at all familiar with the How Are You, Where Are You podcast? Have you heard about that?
No.
Okay. They're New Zealand bikey folks that they spent, I'm trying to remember, I want to say at least 7 years ago, they moved to London. But then over the past year to 2 years, they've been riding through South America. And they just returned to New Zealand, so... I am, I guess, freshly acquainted with some of the New Zealand geography, but not well enough to recount it to you, sadly.
Wellington with basically there's hills to climb to get out of Wellington area.
Yeah.
I guess there is some ways of avoiding it.
Mm-hmm.
Gentle climb up, but a steep descent, which means coming back as hell.
Right.
Grade is one of those things. Mm. Yeah. It's 3,000 feet is completely different on a 3% than a. Yeah,
but it's also 13. When you go up a hill thinking, that's fine for coming back. But when you go down something that's nice and fast,
mm-hmm.
you've got to come up that.
See, when I grew up in New Hampshire on the East Coast, and I lived on top of a 600 vertical foot hill, so about 2 miles, about 600 vertical feet.
So that's why I put my bike in the car and go down to the bottom of the hill.
See, it was cool. Like, I get to start every ride with a bomb. Like, I just get to fly down the hill, and then it was, all right, well, shit, I'm going back up. And it's only about 15 minutes of climbing, at least it was when I was, like, 17 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of glad for that in retrospect because that was when I didn't really even know what a derailleur was. So I have a mountain bike. I ride it. It goes that way. Cool. Climbing is always going to suck. Yeah. There's this, what was it? Was it Eddie Merckx? It doesn't get easier. You just go faster.
Yeah.
And if I had another bike that was better geared for it, then I'd probably consider it more.
Well, I'm not saying you should do it.
The ride to work will be slower.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's get that wide range. We'll get you a 1x setup. It'll be great.
Getting a second bike and one that can go off-road is on my to-do list.
There you go.
There's other things as well, and I waste money by coming over and traveling and seeing other parts of the world.
Right, right.
That's, yeah. Got to see places, yeah.
Mm. What? So,
and you should get
the
a
bike I've got
then.
At the moment is not on, from Spinlister. It's sitting upright.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
But as a tourist, you want to travel a lot slower.
Right.
You're seeing
things. You want to see everything. And being down in the drops isn't going to work. Yeah.
Like, very much for work, it is the destination of getting to work to be there on time. Mm. Here, it's we can ride to see things.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. A relaxed perspective, yeah. Yeah. The right tool for the job, that's the thing, yeah.
Yeah.
That's where M+1 comes in handy.
How many bikes do you need? One more.
What is the correct number of bikes to own? One more.
Until I'm biking on sand, I probably don't need a fat bike.
50-mile beach is right there.
80-mile.
80-mile beach, oh, yeah, yeah.
So that's about 10 hours drive away.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
You could rent one for that trip, I suppose.
There you go, yeah.
What is the next adventure or, like, traveling thing you want to do?
Nothing planned at this stage. Yeah. The last year has been more than originally thought of with doing Boston and New York this time last year and then being able to spend 3 months in Finland with work.
Right, right, yeah. So it
then this, so
checks off a lot of your boxes, I'm sure.
Yeah, Boston, New York, and Portland are three entirely different places.
So yeah, so 3.5 years ago when we came over, it was based on Eugene was a setting in a novel that my partner read.
Oh, nice!
And so we drove for that. Drove up from San Fran, stayed mm-hmm. 2 nights in Eureka. Because the idea, you don't want to be driving 2 days in a row.
Right.
Then a week in Eugene, then 4 days in Seattle, 2 nights in, Vancouver, Washington. So got to see a little bit of Portland.
Yeah.
And then 4 days in San Fran. So that there was a good introduction, really, for the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this time flying to Vancouver, rent bikes there. Two nights in Seattle.
Seems like you've seen all the best parts of the West Coast.
Eugene was good, and we avoided the I-5 as part of our trip. So
oh,
we
really?
Went up the 101,
nice.
Fascinating.
Drove inland from Florence, and that ride from Florence to Eugene, I just loved that drive, not ride.
But there's
would
a
be
lot
a great
of
great ride though.
What were you driving, or were you in the passenger seat?
Both.
Okay, so it's a ride.
And going down, leaving Portland, we went inland to Bend and,
over Hood then?
We went by.
Yeah.
stopped in Bend briefly. We ended up having 2 nights in Klamath Falls, which I wouldn't recommend. But it was somewhere to break the journey to get down to San Fran because it was long.
And you get to see, like, different climates, too. Cause,
well, I got to see Crater Lake as part of that as well, which was a bonus because it wasn't on the agenda originally. And it was amazing to see.
Totally.
And that's part of what...
Was that having, your first time seeing it?
Oh, first and only.
I know.
It's hard enough to get... It's kind of like our 90-mile beach, 80-mile beach.
Even from that area, just seeing the snow poles on the side of the road, which were higher than the ones I'd seen in Scotland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of snow up there
and
in the off-season.
It was 30 degrees when we were there. It was, so what's that, getting close to 90.
Yeah.
When we were here, the zoo, there was no animals to be seen because they were all sleeping with the heat. And we joked, what if you opened a zoo and had no animals, just told people they were sleeping?
I feel like you could do that and you'd probably make a lot of money and you'd get away with it for a long time.
It would make Amtrak a lot cheaper overnight.
Wait, if it was a zoo?
If it was a zoo, you had people come in and look at all the sleeping people. Every car is a sleeper car. Sleeper cars now more affordable.
For this trip, we decided to, from Vancouver, we took the bus to Seattle because Amtrak's too early in the morning.
Which bus did you take?
Pass. I didn't organize that part.
That's okay. What color was it?
I don't know.
It was dark.
It was on the inside. it might have had red and silver or something.
All right, yeah, yeah.
But we took Amtrak for Seattle to Portland.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so it was good to see that. We did that for Boston to New York as well.
Yeah.
We're in the Cascade Line out here.
What's that?
The Cascade Line.
Yes.
Nice.
The European-style train.
That's one that I actually roll a bike on. I almost took one back from Olympia recently.
But yeah. We looked at the train to go down to San Fran, but it takes far too long.
It does take a while.
The train is slow here, which surprises me because it's wide gauge, whereas back home it's narrow gauge, which limits the speed.
Sure. Yeah, the only thing that limits the speed here is...
political dogma?
The way I've heard it described is Amtrak is what happens when you let the Postal Service run an airline. So
that's really fucking accurate.
Yeah. It's just there are many unforeseen delays, and nothing is as efficient as it could be. So, yeah.
One of these years, we'll just draw the big box with an X in the middle across the entire country, and cool, we'll give us some 200-mile-an-hour trains. It'll be great. It'll be...
Yeah. Well, and we read that article that you passed along to me about...
the sleeper buses?
The sleeper bus, yeah, because you can get on the bus and fall asleep in San Francisco, wake up in L.A., or vice versa.
It's for, latida tech folk, but...
but
still,
I'm surprised that hasn't been done before.
Idea. Yeah, I mean, get onto the bus, go to sleep, wake up where you're going.
Yep.
Cool.
Couldn't be nicer.
Yeah.
To have your ham and eggs in Carolina, as the old song goes.
It's totally possible to average 50 mph anywhere in the country, as long as you just don't stop.
Right, right. You need direct lines, direct service. Yeah.
Well, I've done this like when I was following bands around and shit. But like, as long as you just don't stop and just keep moving the whole time, you can get anywhere pretty quickly.
I mean,
I did Olympia to New Hampshire in 58 hours once by myself. Granted, that was stupid, but like,
But it was spring.
It was winter. I showed up at 10 a.m.
Okay.
I showed up at 10 a.m. on Christmas morning. it was snowing for the last half of the country.
Right.
I had some shit to figure out at that moment. But anyway, it's if you had somebody who was willing to keep the bus going or whatever, then like it's reasonable to just just sleep for a while and we'll get you to Chicago.
Yeah.
So you have multiple drivers who do shifts.
Exactly.
Put on another pot of coffee for the next driver.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, go sleep for a minute. We'll wake you up when we get there, and then it's your turn.
Totally.
But I mean,
long haul flights do a similar thing where they have turns sleeping, the crew as well as the others.
Right.
And some of the flights of like Auckland to Dallas, to Houston is now in there, and there's a direct 21-hour flight that's being talked about or maybe in existence.
Yeah.
It's actually, if you're ever bored on the internet, some of the crew quarters on those long haul flights are hilarious.
Fascinating, right? Because it's just like a little tube.
It's a little cubbyhole. Yeah. It's just tucked above first class. You climb a ladder and then you have to crawl over your sleeping coworker to get to your little bunk thing.
Probably not a lot different from people in submarines and military boats.
Right. Or interstellar travel someday.
I got to see the last submarine in Finland.
Really?
Because they aren't allowed submarines anymore.
Really? Aren't allowed?
Because they lost the war.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, that happens. Russians. Yeah.
Wait. Oh, well, yeah.
Around the time of World War II.
Yeah.
They were busy battling a different war. And it was tiny. It seated eight people. Slept a crew of eight or so.
Yeah.
And constant noise. Mm-hmm. But just that small bunks that they had. Yep. And they're sort of staying underwater for a few days at a time.
Right, right. And kind of designed with the idea of being like, you could be here for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you need to.
Because the Baltic Sea isn't deep either.
Yeah.
You've got to stay down.
Yeah. Actually, in one of the, when the Lad 700 made Bike Portland, it was one of the comments was about a guy who was on one of the nuclear submarines. And apparently, it was 700 something laps of the control deck was a marathon. And he was like, oh, that sounds like the thing we did on the submarine. And I'm like, you guys were bored as shit down there, weren't you? Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
What does long distance transit look like in New Zealand?
It is from Wellington, which is in the middle of the country. It's called get on a plane and get off in Auckland an hour later.
Okay.
Or get on a train and get off in Auckland 12 hours later.
There you go.
But the plane is cheaper.
Right.
Is it really?
The train is now tourist. It does stop at Scenic Bridge, but passenger trains that aren't commuter service.
Okay.
Tourist services only, really, and yeah. they're priced as that.
Which seems to be kind of what Amtrak is doing, too, in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, I almost got a ride back on the train from Olympia, and it was $40, which right. is, that's a 25 cents a mile.
Yes.
Plus, closer to 30.
It gets steep.
Yeah, I mean, it's neat, but I mean, it's, I don't know, I keep hoping infrastructure is going to get better, but it's
your domestic flights aren't cheap either.
Well, that's the thing I was annoying. I'm amazed that you can, it's, I mean, doing an internal country flight, like, is the plane going on elsewhere? Like, so it drops half the plane off, picks up another half, and then goes off to somewhere else, or?
Well,
Are they just planes that are hopping around New Zealand?
New Zealand, well, there's, domestic.
Okay,
there's New Zealand, but, like, a flight to Australia, which is two time zones away.
I forget how big it is.
So you can think of what two time zones difference here is.
Oh, yeah, easy.
I had a couple of colleagues who were both going to funerals. One was going to Australia and one was going domestic in New Zealand, and the domestic cost a lot more.
Really?
Just like getting places point to point is tricky.
And that was direct flights for both of them.
Yeah.
Is it just to encourage like
there is more sales international like there is deals with the international. Sure. There is deals yeah. domestically, and that's yeah. why with a great deal I could probably get to Wellington to Auckland for say $40 if I bought well in advance.
$40 for a plane, man.
That's
and so an hour's flight.
That's amazing. Pitcher of beer. Like
consider that from takeoff to arrival sort of thing. Like an hour's yeah. the flight time is
right.
what's yeah. considered. So it's not the puddle jumper of LA to San Diego, which was I've done that and that's smaller.
Yeah.
Propeller flight, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. I'm just that's thinking
the
like
business travel sort of flights as
yeah.
well.
Yep.
Yeah, because it cost a little less than $500 to get to Mexico City from here.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And at one point we Anna and I fantasized about either
is that return?
No, it was two way. It was yeah with a return flight. Yes, yeah. yes. And so we fantasized like maybe we could get a layover in Tulsa or in Detroit and maybe visit other family. And then we even thought, well, we'll just get two tickets. We'll get one to Tulsa and then one from Tulsa to Mexico City.
A dog
and,
leg, yeah.
Yeah. But here's the thing is a ticket to either Tulsa or Detroit costs just as much as a ticket to Mexico City.
And a lot of people in the U.S. will actually do buy the longer flight that has that stopover and get off at that destination because it ends up being cheaper.
Because it ends up being cheaper. That's crazy.
But they have to watch out for their the return being cancelled on them if they didn't do the other part. Long-haul flights tend to be from New Zealand, I've noticed, they tend to be priced as individual. So us flying into Vancouver and flying out of San Fran wasn't adding that expensive sort of thing, but often return flights can often be considered cheaper.
Huh.
Okay.
Now, it's very hard, at least in my experience, it's very hard to make a return trip from a different city than where your original
destination
was. So
domestically in New Zealand, you're buying a lot of one-way fares anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true.
So that
yeah.
makes that easier. You're not getting a bargain by having that return ticket. You're buying two one-way fares.
I see.
And when you're doing the pricing and that, you're buying each leg separately and what's available. So you may not even have all the options for what tickets are available on that return flight.
It seems easier to plan for it that way, at least. Like, you know it's not going to change all that much.
Yeah, it was fun. When I was doing shows and shit, like, all right, well, we got to go to Denver, Colorado. It's $140 to fly there, round trip, or about that much in gas, and we have five people in a car. All right, it's going to suck for 14 hours, but
we're all going to get there together.
It's $40 each. Yeah. Cool, let's go. and just drive all night.
Yeah,
but
right.
The car, you can't drive to Australia.
Right, that's the trick.
And that's where the submarine comes in.
Yeah. I mean, I've done a couple dog legs, and it's or flights where you start in one city, fly to one, and then fly back to a different, like fly from A to B to C.
Yeah,
that's easier than flying from like trying to do it the other way,
A to B, and then flying C to A.
Right, exactly.
So the open jawed ticket is
That's the one that really. That one. Yeah, they'll. I forgot the word for it, but nice. They. That's the one where they get you because. You type that in any of the ones, like the algorithms, they go,
we know what you're doing.
You're doing something special, aren't you?
When I went to Finland, it was tricky to do it from leaving Wellington to have a stopover in Hong Kong to get to Helsinki, and then the return to have the stop. Stopover in Singapore.
Okay, yeah. So similar point, like the same hemisphere, more or less, but yeah.
Well, because at sort of 21, 22 hours flying total, I wanted to have a stopover.
Right, yeah, you need to get out.
Let me off this fucking plane.
Or so help me.
Yeah. So just to round out the transportation conversation, like what is driving like in
So in the New roads Zealand? Aren't as high speed as they are here, because like State Highway 1 at times is one lane, both directions, no divider.
Wow.
Small road.
Yeah. So,
similar to a dual carriageway.
Well, it's 100 kilometres. Yeah, dual carriageway.
Okay, yeah.
Which British term we don't use at a time.
Oh, sorry. Apologies.
You are a man of the world, David Robinson.
Not really, but.
So speed limit of 100 kilometres an hour, which is
60. That's the one I know.
63 is 100 kilometers.
50 was 80, because when we went metric, 50-mile open road limit was 80 as the time when it was in the 70s. That changed. Okay. But, yeah, so it takes longer to drive it than a visitor from America would expect.
Yeah.
And so that is a big thing to allow that extra travel time. I think 9 to 10 hours is considered reasonable to drive Auckland Wellington.
What are the dangers of automobile traffic like where you're from? Like, is it obviously like anytime there are cars, they will crash into something? But do crashes happen with great regularity or?
There is like public holidays; they do announce what the road toll is. But they announced on fatalities rather than accidents, fatal accidents. So if an accident kills 5 people as opposed to killing 1 person, it sounds a lot worse.
Right, right.
And whether it's a single vehicle or multi-vehicle accident, again, is a difference there.
Sure.
The road toll is, I think, per capita is quite a lot less than it is in the US.
I would imagine. Well, it seems like, one, you said lower speeds. And two, I mean, I don't know exactly what the general attitude is for most people who live where you do, but it seems to me that Americans have this, like, it's all about me. I'm getting there now as
Sammy
fast
Hagar.
As I can.
I can't drive.
A lot of drivers are like that. Because I drive sometimes. I love cruise control on my car because it takes away that urgency.
Right.
I can let it set that speed, and then I can be a lot more patient.
Right.
Roll on robot cars, because then I can have a few drinks.
Right.
Exactly. And when I get older and that, it means staying in your own home and having that mobility without relying on family.
Of course. So you're very pro self-driving cars.
Oh,
like, let's have those. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a great thing. Great for others as well, sort of.
And it's going to make biking like a dick so much more fun.
I mean, they had that fun where the guy was doing
the
track
stand
and the Google car, and sort of because the bike would be moving slightly, the car would keep stopping to let the cyclist go, and the cyclist was doing it.
Yeah,
I love that story.
Like, I didn't know at the time, though, that the Google car was limited to 25 miles an hour.
I had never heard that myself.
Yeah.
For the testing phase, that was one of their, like, guys, we're going to do this anyway, but it's going to be okay. They're not going to go fast.
Right. To kind of allay people's fears about the testing phase. Right. And yeah, it makes
sense. Which must be tough on the freeway.
I'm sure.
At the same point, I mean, like, coding them for the freeway is probably going to be about the easiest thing ever. If you can handle a 4-way intersection with a, you know, track standing track fixie guy.
Well, they do have troubles with waiting for buses. one accident, which
that was the one accident that they caused.
They caused, yeah.
I think I do remember hearing about this.
I don't remember the situation
at all.
There
was roadworks in front of them, and they needed to move into the other lane, and they had assumed somehow that, yes, there's a bus coming, but it will actually give way. They've right. now changed the algorithm to say that buses aren't going to give way to them.
Bus drivers got to go where bus drivers got to go. Yeah, exactly.
The blue ones don't stop.
Just to let them in.
Good to know. Good assumptions. Well, it's probably going to be about the time where I need to go home and get ready for the next day fair of enough. Work. So, Brian, thank you for coming out.
Yeah.
Pleasure to meet you.
I came out years ago.
And also, thank you for joining us on the podcast.
That was beautiful.
Hello, it's Brock again, and I just rode the tall bike home. The rear wheel is magnificently true, and it feels fantastic. So thank you again, Drew the Welder, for supporting the tall bike riding, that, and of course the podcast, of course by Dent, I suppose. So thank you also to Shadowfoot for coming and joining us. It was a pleasure to meet him in person. And I hope you folks enjoyed this conversation we had with Shadowfoot and David Robinson. More cool stuff coming soon. Of course, episode 300 is just around the corner. You'll have that next week. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Email thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call 503-847-9774 with your voicemails, your text messages, your cool pictures. Send them our way, please. Thank you, of course, to the beer mongers at Southeast Division and 12th, whom, of course, we would not drink without. And thank you to all of our financial donors. We appreciate your support more than we can say. And we should say it more. So, thank you. Stay tuned. Next week, more coming soon. Take care. Bye.